Welcome to the Labyrinth. A journey not in space, but time. Welcome to the Labyrinth. I'm George. Tonight we take you on a journey through not space, but time. A path in time, and not a straight one, but what they call a garden path.
Uncle Hardy, tell me a story.
All right, nephew. Here's one. The Many Minds of Dr. H.D. Zay.
That sounds weird.
All right, here's another one. And I hung up the phone. Immediately, I recollected the voice that had spoken in German. It was that of Captain...
No, make one up.
I don't know if I can do that. Oh, hang on a minute.
Delivery for Hardy White.
Oh, okay. Where do I sign?
Just pretend. No one checks.
All right, thanks. What is this? I wasn't expecting a package. Wow, it's a Viewmaster.
Hello, Hardy. The picture you are seeing is of Dr. Yu Tsung, a German spy. We believe he has infiltrated British intelligence and is going to reveal the location of a bombing campaign using an elaborate scheme involving lots of references to a novel by his ancestor that is confusing and impenetrable, like your show. Your mission, if you choose to pursue it, is to find Yu Tsung and stop him or something. We have already assembled your team for you. Butchie Spinoza, specializing in rationalism and rage. Lou Register, expert in lifting boxes. Hans Conry, the Baron of Baltimore, expert actor. Don Bourgeoisie, a talking house with real estate experience. And Belinda Blurb, TV producer and electronics expert. As usual, should you screw this up, which undoubtedly you will, we will deny any knowledge of your very existence, which is horrifying if you think about it. This classic vintage Viewmaster will self-destruct in 5 seconds. Take your eyes away from it, idiot.
I do not recall being the head of any intelligence organization.
Intelligence? You? Yeah, no.
Are you aware of this mission?
Yeah, I got an evite about it. So what's our first step? Rubber masks? I got a Nixon one somewhere with the nose ripped out.
Yeah, I don't see us needing that.
What? Leprosy Nixon has gotten me out of many a scrape. Also, syphilitic Agnew.
You know, something that baffles me. Along with getting a mission assignment when I'm not a spy, is that the voice said that Lou would be one of our agents. But Lou's gone.
I can go back in time and get a pass, Lou.
Oh, maybe that'd be good.
Hey, Butchie told me what you guys are up to, and I'm glad to help. I don't know why you just didn't use a present-day me, though.
Present-day you is too fat.
Oh, that sounds about right. I feel like if I don't watch my diet, I'm on a bad road. What?
You don't know the half of it.
Butchie, listen, Lou. We have this secret mission to find a spy. I assume it's in the past, though. We just need to contact Hans and, I guess, past Don, because present Don is a house, and he's not going to be much good.
I'm hearing all of this, by the way. I'm right here.
Oh, I'm sorry, Don. I just don't see how we can bring you along with us.
I totally understand. Some days I wish I was a Barbie dream house with a handle and could go right along with you guys.
I do too, Don.
I called Hans and he's on his way over. He just needs to finish cheating an old lady out of her inheritance.
Okay, and who is Belinda Blurb?
No idea.
Me neither. Hopefully she'll contact us.
Belinda? Oh, she's the producer of the Mozahowitz show.
Who's Mozahowitz?
That's you, Butchie, in a different timeline.
Where is Belinda?
What are you hollering about, Oliver?
Belinda isn't here, and the show goes on in 3 minutes.
So you just do a job, then.
I can't.
Why? What's a job?
Everything. She does everything.
And so what's your job?
I'm not sure. I think it's to panic and worry.
Well, you're good at that.
Am I, though?
Don't worry, she'll turn up. Look, I'm on in a few minutes, so is there like a script or something?
Here's the book by Yutsun's ancestor.
What book?
You said you needed a book by Yutsun's ancestor to solve the riddle and find him.
Find who?
You, I imagine. And I don't mean the pronoun. I mean the name of the spy we're following.
I'm sorry. Is this part of a larger story I'm missing?
Everything's part of a larger story. What's wrong with you?
Go on. Oh, I'm sorry, Doctor. I forgot where I was. Well, I clearly remember this park we used to go to when I was a child. By we, I mean my mother and I. And sometimes when I concentrate, I can even remember how we got there. My mother drove a convertible in those days, and it was such a treat to have that top down, feel the sun and the breeze on my face. One particular time stands out because she made gingerbread men, and it was the first time I'd had one, riding in that car, top down on the way to the park. But I could not tell you for the life of me how to get there from our old house. I've been there as an adult and wanted to see the park, but I lost my way. I always lose my way when I think too hard and try to remember too intently.
Throw me the book, and then I'll pull you in.
Oh, that old trick. You'll just take the book and run.
Geez, man, I don't even know what the book is for. And besides, I'm your friend.
Okay. Here.
Dang, missed it.
Lou?
Sorry, we'll get another one. I'll order another one.
You can't just order one. That took us weeks to find. It's one of a kind.
Let's just get you back in, and then you can berate me all you want. Unless you don't want to come back in.
Pull me up, Lou.
I thought so.
So, is this book you're reading from the same book that you're looking for as a spy?
That's correct.
That doesn't make any sense. How can there be a book that has a story of what you're doing in it when you're not done doing it yet?
You mean, what type of book has a story in it about itself?
I guess.
A riddle book.
A riddle book? Like Bennett Cerf?
No, that's a joke book.
Oh, like, hey, little boy, is your mother home? Yes. Ring, 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 ring. There's nobody home. I thought you said your mother was home. This isn't my house.
Yes, that's a Bennett Cerf joke.
Or is it a riddle? Maybe the door-to-door salesman is selling a book with that story in it.
It could be. So this book is a type of maze, a time maze, with wrong turns and false endings, but it's still the story of its own discovery.
Next time do Treasure Island. I like the part where the boy is hiding in the apple barrel, but they don't see him.
Yeah.
He's in there, though.
Yeah.
Writing the book Treasure Island.
Maybe.
Yes. I would like to see your rare book collection, please.
Oh, of course. As you know, though, because those volumes are very valuable, I will need to see your credentials. Your credentials, please.
Oh, I thought you said credenza at first, and I hesitated because I only have a buffet, which is a different piece of furniture, is it not?
Yes.
My credentials are right here in my pocket. I am reaching for them now.
Oh, good.
Are you sure?
Am I sure of what?
Oh, sorry, I wasn't talking to you.
To whom were you talking?
No, I was talking to you. My credentials are printed up and ready to hand to you. And here they are.
Dr. George Louis Borges.
Yes, but you can call me Lou so I don't get confused.
You are professor of antiquities at Trailways College in New Baltimore.
Yeah, I am told it's near Pittsburgh.
And what volume are you interested in?
Oh, just the one book.
Yes, which book?
Oh, hang on. It's Garden Path Time Maze by Hardy White.
Oh, yes, we have that.
Oh, good. May I see it alone, please?
Yes, of course.
I like to sometimes loosen my pants when I do research, and should I forget and stand up, I fear my undergarments will be exposed.
Of course, you may do your research in private.
Thank you. I'm in.
Morning.
Morning, Butchie. Morning, Lou.
Bad news. Spiny ate your coffee mug.
How did a dog eat a ceramic mug?
He's bred to eat dinnerware.
How did he get my mug?
Listen, if you leave things out...
It was in the cabinet.
That's out. Anything not in the safe, it's like inviting the dog to eat it.
I'll just have my coffee in a styrofoam mug, I guess.
Man, fate is a funny thing.
Yeah, hilarious.
I'm doing the crossword, and the clue is credenza. And I thought it said careen. I know. And so I wrote buffet, but I spelled it wrong. And in fact, buffet is the right answer.
I don't think credenza and buffet are the same thing.
Life can take all sorts of turns, depending on your choices.
There's no free will.
I knew you'd say that.
How could I not?
Psst. Hey, did you psst, Hardy?
No.
Psst, over here.
Hey,
shh, come here.
But Butchie, you're...
But Butchie, I'm what?
Oh, nothing.
Come here.
I'll be right back. I have diarrhea.
Jeez, Lou.
Hey, Butchie, how is it that you're over here in the guest bathroom and also in the kitchen?
I'm Butchie from the future. I need you to come with me. We have a secret mission.
But I can't just leave.
Yes, you can. I don't remember you disappearing in the past. Therefore, we never noticed.
Oh, good point.
I'm going to stop you again right there.
All right.
These chapters seem out of order.
Why do you say that?
The scenes with the book come before getting Lou from the past.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what led up to the scenes getting the book.
Well...
Let me answer this one.
Oh, hi, Uncle Butchie.
Hi, kid. You practicing your knife skills like I taught you?
Yes, sir. Left side, third rib, angle up.
That's the ticket.
Butchie, stop.
Anyway, you're thinking about time all wrong. Did you ever see one of those murals that depicts some event or some battle, and it's all laid out in one picture, but different parts of the picture are happening at different times? So the whole mural is Elysia. But you have Vercingetorix here, but also he's over here, and you have Caesar here, but he's also here and here, because it's all happening at different times. But it's also all at once in the form of a mural.
I see.
Everything that ever happened or will happen is a big two-dimensional plane. And we, as time travelers, move around that plane like it's a dinner plate, the type a dog might eat.
Wow.
That's interesting, Butchie.
Yeah, and there's no free will. Bye.
Bye, Uncle Butch.
I got it. I found the book.
Good work, Belinda. Where is it?
It's in the Strozier Library at Florida State University in Tallahassee, Florida. It's in their rare book collection.
Perfect. Lou, you're going to get it for us.
How's that? I don't even have a library card. And I don't think I'm eligible because I have an outstanding Bank AmeriCard debt.
You're going to be using an alias. Butchie, do you have his credentials?
Credenza?
Credentials, you moron. Here they are.
Let's see. Professor Borges. Oh, that's a little obvious.
All right, here.
Borges. That's better. Professor Borges from Greyhound College.
That sounds like a school for bus drivers.
Okay, I'll change it. Man, you guys micromanage bad.
And it's in New Baltimore.
Where's that?
Tell him it's near Pittsburgh.
Okay.
All right, here they are, Lou.
But these are blank pages.
We can't print them out yet because we need to check the alias against what the librarian already knows. So we'll print them out remotely in this wallet. Don't pull them out until I tell you. You'll be wearing this earpiece and I'll talk to you through it.
Okay, just one question about the credenza. That's lower than a buffet, right?
Take the leprosy Nixon mask just in case.
Wait.
What now?
So how is Lou going to get the book through security?
I don't know. We're not there in the book yet.
And also, you keep talking about this book having a clue in it about the spy, but you never mention the spy. And I thought that Hans found the book. And how did you get when you were hanging off the side of the cliff?
No, those are all good questions.
I'm confused.
I totally understand that. And if this story were a joke, there would be something to get. But what if it's a riddle?
But riddles have answers.
Do they?
Yes.
But do they?
Yes.
Well, what if the riddle is a paradox?
How so?
What if once you arrive at a detail in a story, a point in the story, and instead of it leading in a straight line to the next point, it forks off, and depending on which path you take, you could wander far away from the original story?
Well, that would be frustrating and stupid.
Only frustrating if you have expectations about what should happen next.
I guess so. Go on.
All right. What if your life and everyone's life was like a jigsaw puzzle, and you had filled in some of the picture, but there was still a lot of it not filled in, and also you don't have the box anymore. I guess you're keeping the pieces in a bag or something. So you have some of the picture filled in, and you don't know what the rest of the picture is going to look like until you fill it in. But you see, the picture's already on the pieces, so you don't have really any control, but you also don't know what the pieces are going to be, or how to fill them in. Oh, Butchie told me that story. He says, that's how you have no free will and free will at the same time. And I said, that's a paradox. And he said, you're an idiot. And I said, why? Isn't that the right answer? He goes, yeah, but you're still an idiot. And I feel that way. Yes, I can have the right answers and still be an idiot, just the way I can be with people and still feel alone. Oh, but not for long, because when I am with people, I feel much better. I despair when I'm by myself, but when I'm with others, I feel a little better, because maybe I can share my despair, or maybe they're sharing theirs, so I have to kind of be quiet and just listen to their despair. But I do like to be with other people, and that's why I have this show. Oh, a long time ago, someone came to me, a mysterious figure dressed in, like, monk's robes, except they were seersucker. And I thought, you must be some sort of southern monk. And they said, no, I just like, this fabric was all that was available. I went down there. Here's how a lot of monasteries work. You will join the monastery, and they'll say, fantastic, we love to have you. I want you to go down to Joanne Fabric and get some fabric we're going to make, some robes and a cowl. And I heard cow. Is that a fabric cow? That's fantastic. But no, it's that hood and all. And so you go down there, and a lot of times, a lot of the monks will purchase inappropriate fabric. Let's say something that's really intended for a child's pajamas or a quilt or something. I got drapery fabric. And I thought, oh, this is just like Gone with the Wind. And they said, no, this is going to look really stupid. It's not going to flow. Oh, so I had to go back again, and eventually we settled on some, it was child's sheets, and they were based on a movie. I'm not going to tell you what movie it is, because I don't want to seem silly, but I felt very holy in them, you know, because I was, I guess because I didn't have any underwear on, and that's a lot of times that will make you feel very spiritual. Say, boy, I feel the breeze upon me, coming up through my robes and everything. And they say, yes, that's the feeling of being alive. A lot of times when you have very tight underwear on, it's not good for you either. They say, you need to let everything, your soul, air out. So not just your intimate parts, but also, you know, your heart. You need to air out your heart. And you will see in a lot of communities, if you drive by on a train, maybe you're not driving the train. Who is driving the train? It's a riddle. Who's driving the bus? Nobody knows. So you're going by on the train, which you may or may not be driving. You could be also in the caboose. I don't know if they have that job anymore. They used to have a person up front and the person in the back. And the person in the back with the caboose would be, their job would be to say, everything's all right back here. So you go through a lot of communities, let's say in southern Indiana,
and you will see people's yards. You'll go by people's yards, and hanging out on their clotheslines are their hearts. And you heard the expression to wear your heart on your sleeve. Well, those sleeves have to be cleaned. And those sleeves are out there hanging in the breeze, airing out, just like a monk's genitals. Oh, my friends, I am so glad to be with you and being able to tell you a story. This story is taking a very long time because it keeps doubling back on itself. When I started this radio show 2 years ago, somewhere in between there, but not exactly in between. I don't remember how long I've been doing this. I try not to. I'm sure that it's some finite number, but that's not really how time works. For me, at least, not for anybody, but it's not how I see it. And so I feel like I've been at this a really long time and no time at all. But what you're listening to is one very long story. And it's a book, really. It's a novel about a radio show and about sharing experience with others. Oh, yes, it is. And it has different characters and different plots and things happen at the same time and all sorts of things like that. It is exactly like Butchie's Vercingetorix's mural. Oh, I've seen murals like that where everything is happening at the same time. And you just look and you look around at it. You know, we are used to seeing things laid out before us, one thing following another. But that's even not how we examine things, because sometimes we look back in time and look back in our past and things change. Remember? Say, I always thought that that thing on my grandfather's head was his favorite hat. It turns out it was a growth. And so it adjusts, the past does. It changes all the time as we learn more about it, as we learn more about ourselves. Say, wow, the biggest example is I thought our dog went to live on a farm or something like that. Or you're told a lie. It's, oh, my parents weren't my parents at all, and they weren't even human beings. I didn't know that. I was raised by not really wolves or monkeys, but an unusual combination. And I guess it was a sort of a kibbutz for vertebrates. And I know that's very wide open. And some weren't there. There weren't any fish, for example, who are vertebrates, but don't like to cooperate, at least on farms. They'll do other things together. And I've seen fish work together. It's a wonderful thing. Have you seen the movie The Amazing Mr. Limpet? He was a fella, Don Knotts, I believe. Don Knotts, after his run on Mayberry, he fell into the water. He was an ichthyologist. Don was, and he had a fascination with these animals. And it turns out, if you have a fascination with something, and this is where we get the word, immerse yourself in it, you turn into that thing. Well, a cartoon version of it. If it was accurate, I wonder if they remade The Amazing Mr. Limpet today, would they do it with like a realistic CGI fish? And would you care about it? Oh, it's a coelacanth or something. It's like, oh, it's horrific. Look at the dead eyes on Don Knotts. It wouldn't be Don Knotts. It would be some other favorite comic actor. Who's a beloved comic actor that we have now? We don't. We don't have any. We don't love them anymore because we know so much about them because of their Twitter accounts. And so it's really hard to have anybody who's beloved because we've seen so much of them. When you're young and you think, I would love some x-ray goggles, right? To see, you know, I'd like to see what's under people's clothes. Some of them work too well. And you see actually what's under their skin. And that has the opposite effect that you're going for. It actually disgusts you. You say, oh my word. Now I see the blood coursing through their, is it coursing? Through their veins? I guess hopefully it's coursing. Is it coursing? The more I say the word, the more wrong it sounds. I think that's with everything. The more I think a thing, the more wrong it sounds. Because it is both wrong and right. And I think when you overuse something, you can destroy it. What's an example? Like a hammer. If you use a hammer too much, it wears down to a... No, that's a terrible example. They often do not wear down. I have a hammer that was my grandfather's, and I use it regularly. And it's a little worn, I suppose, but not so much that you can't use it anymore. What's a better example? Corn cob. If you take that corn cob and you try to nail something with it, and it's very old and rotten, it's still not going to work. And I feel like a lot of times what I'm doing on this show is trying to nail a door shut with a corn cob. I don't know if it can be done, but I try. Do it lengthwise. Do it like that. Oh, I'll try that. That might not work either. I don't care. I'm going to make a pipe out of it, like Popeye. I like Popeye, and I've talked about Popeye a lot. And I guess I was a young man. I don't know if you've ever been into bodybuilding, but you look at, sometimes you have ideal physiques. And I would look at Popeye, and I'd say, those forearms, how does he do that? And it's wrist curls. Really, it's wrist curls. And also, he's a sailor, so he is pulling on those ropes all the time. So what I did is I made a battleship, and it took me a long time. It was like World War I is when Popeye was in the service. I know. So it was World War II. It wasn't. It was earlier than that. So it's like World War I sailor. And he would be pulling on those ropes. So I made a battleship in my backyard and an anchor and anchor rope. And I made an anchor. It was an anchor line. I called it Anne Caroline. That was my little nickname for it because it's like a Southern name. And then I'd pull on it. I said, I'm going to develop my forearms by pulling this anchor up onto my fake ship. And it worked. And for a while, I had enormous Popeye forearms. And I thought, I'll get an anchor tattoo. But see, I wasn't in the Navy. And so that would be, I'd be misrepresenting myself. And I believe maybe I had a dancing girl on. I don't want that on me. That's I don't want that. I don't have any visible tattoos. Do you? I'm not against them at all. I'm not against anything you do. I don't know you, and I don't know what it is you're doing. So I don't really can't take much of a stand against it. I can say what's right for me, and a couple things are right for me. For instance, I know a lot of people today like getting both of their ears cut off. No, that's not true. People just say things like they are true, and you tend to believe them. Because I feel like that's the default setting for the human mind is belief. A lot of people today are taking muriatic acid and putting it up their nose and dissolving their brains. And then they take the brains and they make sort of a protein shake out of it. And then they use that as a fuel for their sports cars. That's not true. Isn't it? So I don't like to state anything definitively, because I'm afraid somebody's going to believe it, and worse, if I believe it, it's probably not true. That's my little test. Let's see, do I believe it? Yes. Then don't say anything, because then somebody else might, who's equally as weak-minded. Are you weak-minded? You seem to be always putting yourself down, Hardy. Thank you. No, I don't. I don't really. Is it false humility? Largely, yes, I think. But that's okay. Because if I was arrogant, you'd be mad at that too. So, well, isn't there a happy medium between being arrogant and being false modesty? I don't know. I feel like it's like working out. Like you start to think too highly of yourself. You say, you know what? I'm going to do some self-deprecating wrist curls. And there you go. You put it back down. But I really actually depend on life to knock me down a little bit. It always does. And I don't think when I do feel highly of myself, I don't think it's too highly. I mean, I've met brilliant people. Do I feel like I'm as brilliant? No. Do I feel like I'm entitled to live? Yes. So are we equals? It depends what you mean by that. Because we're both human beings, and in the grand scheme of things, it's hard to say what's better or best. You can't. We really only have one purpose in life, to keep living, I guess, to reproduce. Other people do that for you. You don't, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. But really, there's a evolution just kind of picks things for the moment. You never know if you're going to have the right skill. Evolution works just like the Impossible Mission Force. You're not going to use Peter Lupus every mission. I forget what the character's name is. I don't care. That was the actor. You're not going to use your rolling hand. You have a rolling hand and you have a smoking hand. No, Rolling Hand is the name of the character. That was played by, I'll think of his name, I don't even care. And but you're not going to use them every mission. Because some mission, you're not going to use the same, I don't care, Hardy. You're not going to use all those people every mission. Sometimes you need the master of disguise. Sometimes you do not. You know what I'm saying? So, Barbara Bain and Martin Balsam. That's somebody else. I know I'm driving you crazy. Isn't it frustrating when you know the answer to something and someone else doesn't and you can't tell them? That's what it's like being a ghost. You just keep yelling it, right? Oh, it's... I'm sorry. I know that's very frustrating to you. But evolution doesn't need your skill all the time. Sometimes you say, but I'm the best. I'm the strongest. Yeah, but right now we don't need the strongest. We need Wally Cox. There was an episode of the original Mission Impossible TV show where they needed Wally Cox. Wally Cox was the right size. He was diminutive. And he was a safecracker. Sometimes you need a diminutive safecracker. Peter Lupus is just too... So Peter Lupus is strong, but he's not strong enough to break open a safe. Why do you even need a safe? You need a safe to keep your dinnerware in so the dog doesn't eat it. Period. But in this case, international spies needed to break into it, so they needed Wally Cox. Wally Cox was an actor, both serious and comic. We know him mostly for his comic work. He was in a show called Mr. Peepers. He was also in a lot of other stuff. He was a regular on some television game shows, for example, Hollywood Squares, for example. He's also the voice of a cartoon called Underdog. He was also the roommate and friend of Marlon Brando. He also appeared in the late 50s in the East Village doing very experimental stand-up comedy. Yes, I know. He did some of the first kind of stand-up comedy that wasn't necessarily funny, would tell these stories, you see, about a guy who would always get hurt or get in trouble. And they were kind of dark and everything. He was one of the first to do that. Does he have credit for it? Mostly, people know him for Underdog. If you're slightly older, Mr. Peepers. And you look at the guy and you say, oh, he's just, look, he looks like nerdy and weak. Oh, but Wally Cox was beyond nerdy and weak. Oh, he had powers and strength and intellect. That what he could do is he was a hobbyist. He was a motorcycle enthusiast. He was an electronics enthusiast. He liked to build things. Whenever Hollywood stars needed their new stereo hooked up, they'd call Wally. Say, Wally, come on, hook up my new... I got a new stereo.
Do you?
Yeah, come on, hook it up.
Righto.
And he'd be over and he'd have his toolbox and everything. Wally Cox. Now, sometimes evolution does need something different, like you say, like I said, like a Barbara Bain or a hammer. My friends, it is impossible to predict what that next piece in the puzzle really is. But it's wonderful to do puzzles. You can sit there, put the card table up, and start putting those pieces together. Oh, yes, does this one fit? No, should we make it fit? Well, it'll change the picture slightly. Yes, and then the other pieces necessarily won't fit. So be patient. You don't need to slam it all together in one sitting. That's not the fun. I mean, the fun isn't having it done, is it? Did you ever see somebody finish a complex jigsaw puzzle and they kind of frame it or something? And you go, oh, that's nice. Now it's just a picture. Yep, I put that together. Did you? All right, well, is that the whole reason you put it together so you'd have a picture? Yes. Well, did you know that that picture was just available as a poster? You could just bought the poster. All right, tell me more. The jigsaw puzzle is actually intended to be a pastime, that the fun is in finding the right piece. All right, go on. So that, you know, once it's complete, sort of all the fun's been exhausted, and you break it up and you try it over again. That seems Sisyphus. That was funny. I was at a friend's birthday party, and there's another friend there, and he said, "I'm not going to say the adjective form of Sisyphus. I'm just going to say like Sisyphus because I mispronounce it all the time." And I said, "You are so right. I'm going to call him out, Trevor." So he was correct, and it made me laugh. And I suppose I just stole that from him. I took that conversation and I put it on the, you know, what's good is he's not listening, which is a lot of times your friends will not listen to your work. Why is that? Let's say you have I'm going to talk directly to, I know who you are, who aren't listening. That's fine. Because I think if you, sometimes when you interact with a person in real life, why would you then sit and hear the spoken word only version of them? When in real life you can go, hey, shut up. And that's wonderful. And that's what your real friends do when they sit down with you. Not that you're not my real friends. You are my real friends. Oh, I don't know where I'd be without you. I'd be so lost without you. Oh, it's like we're on a wagon train. You know how they used to do that? Back in the day when we were, when Europeans were invading other people, they would do it in this really horrifying way. They'd get in little wagons. And they'd come onto your land like that, and they'd say, hey, this is undiscovered land. You say, wait, not really. People do that now, come in your house and say, oh, no one's ever been in this house before. And you go, hang on, I'm right here. I'm sure they do that. Is that human nature? I don't know. I don't know that many humans. I don't want to judge. But I know that we do terrible things to one another, don't we? A lot of them out of ignorance. That's one of the great strengths of the human race, is complete and utter ignorance and foolishness. The good thing is, though, in a justice sort of way, is that your ignorance always sort of backfires on you. You always end up suffering a lot of times, suffering a terrible fate because you're stupid. But then others suffer with you. You know, it's like Gilligan. If Gilligan was just dumb. Now, I'm not saying he caused the wreck of the Hesperus. Not the Hesperus. The minnow. Why did I say that? There's a lot of comparisons between Sherwood Schwartz and Longfellow. I don't know if you know that. But Gilligan did not necessarily cause the wreck. But let's say he did. Because he's foolish. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm loath to say, to diagnose him or anything. I think he's just kind of careless. I don't think he's really intellectually impaired as much as he's just kind of careless, doesn't pay attention or something. He's distracted. So let's say Gilligan causes the wreck. See, then his flaw doesn't only affect him, it affects others because we're all in a boat. So what you do in the boat, so if you say, well, don't be up in my business, stay about my business. I go, well, the reason I'm in your business is because it's kind of a boat. And I'm worried we're all going to sink because you're jumping around and everything. I love to jump. Don't get me wrong. I love to jump, and jumping in boats is fun because they almost tip over and all that. And sometimes you put your foot through the boards in the bottom of the boat, it starts to leak, and then the water will sometimes jet up like a geyser. And it's fun to look around frantically for a cork or bail out. But, you know, you got to consider there might be old folks on the boat who can't swim or can't scramble for a cork. So you need to be mindful a little bit that there's others around, not for any grand reason other than you want them to also be mindful about rocking the boat. Don't rock the boat. That doesn't mean rock the boat now means to it has a different connotation. So to not rock the boat means not to stand up for what's right or just to keep your mouth shut and to enforce the status quo, But that's not what I mean by it. I mean, don't tip the boat over. And I think that the Hughes Corporation made that very, very clear. Who is the Hughes Corporation? Oh, they were very... I think that's what they're called. A lot of bands back in the day had confusing names. Association. You say, was that it sounds like a spy group. It's not. They're just singers. Oh, my goodness. And I am just a storyteller, except I'm not. Storytellers are very different from what I do because they have a point and they're going somewhere. They go, I wonder how this story would end. And I don't want it to end. Why would I? If it ended, you'd stop listening. You'd clap and go home. I don't want that. No, 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 no. This is something that goes on and on and on. Like one of those annoying campfire songs or stories or something. It just, oh, does it have an ending? No. It just has a stopping point, and we'll resume it again. And this never ends. It's an infinite story. It can't end. It can't. It can't really ever be quantified. How many pages has the book that you are writing, Hardy Schnook? I don't know. It has no certain amount of pages. They change all the time. I don't know. I just keep loading information in it. And a lot of times what will happen, like my memory, is I'll be writing the book and I'll get about halfway through and the first few chapters will disappear. This happened in my, I keep a autobiography in my brain. And I'm now missing the first few years. Like I couldn't even tell you what happened to me up until age, maybe five, four or five. You know, and I have like one or two pages left, but no details. And I knew I was remembering things, and I'll tell you why I know I was remembering things, because I learned how to speak. So definitely I had memories. I learned who my family was. I learned what my house looked like. So I was remembering things, but a lot of that's gone in the book of my life. It's disappeared. And so it just starts... I don't know, chapter 5 or something. I have all those intact. And I'm adding more. But the more I add, if I go back and I reread the old chapters, I think, boy, I think I got that wrong. That's not what happened at all. I found out later that that's not what happened at all. Oh, my goodness. There is a garden near my house. And a very strange things happen. I will go through the garden gate and I will start to walk and I will start to wander among the flowers. There are roses. There are peonies. There are Pyrenees. There's a small chain of mountains there. And I guess it's the Pyrenees. I don't know. What happens is my perspective changes all the time. Sometimes I fly out into space. Sometimes I get very small and I can't really tell whether I'm looking at mountains or anthills. Do you ever see the expression? You're making a mountain out of a molehill. I go, I don't know what a molehill is. And there you go, because I thought they just tunneled underground. I could say you're making a cave out of a molehole. But I don't know, my friend. And so I will wander this garden, and it will take me different places. But it never takes me to the same place twice. And if I make a little map, I will see that I have never walked the same path, even though I think I have. And I never get back to the place that I came in. I can't find it. I don't know where I entered. I can get out of the garden. Yeah, sure. You know, hop over some bushes to the side or something. Snag my pant leg on a rose thorn. Oh, thorns. Thorn bushes have roses on them, don't they? That's weird. Sometimes I clip those roses off because I don't like false hope. That's a thorn bush making you think that it's got something it doesn't. Clip those roses off. It's a thorn bush. He'd say, oh, can't you clip the thorns off and it'd just be just the sweet-smelling roses? There are way more thorns than roses. So I just clip off the roses and accept. Besides, I might need to use the thorns for something. What can they be used for? Scraping flesh off your arm or something? Should you need that? I don't need that, really. I don't know what they can be used for. But everything has a use.
No, it doesn't.
I know. I'm just telling that to people so they'll have something to prove me wrong. I know that a lot of people don't like to agree with you. And that's fine. Did you ever say, just make a, do this experiment on social media. Make just a statement. And it can be absolutely say, I'm going to think of some kind of true statement. And someone will correct you. Or clarify. That's what they say. I'm going to clarify that. And then it's like butter. It's nice when it's clarified, but it doesn't really affect it that much. If you really want to clarify it and then kind of brown the solids, you got ghee, which is very nice. So it's strange that we all feel the need to chip in. I think that has something to do with evolution. And because people will not ever not say, and me. Good. That's great. But if somebody makes a statement, you don't have to chime in. Not, and this is the way I've looked at it. So what are your, people ask me my opinions on things, and I go, I hem and haw. I mostly haw, I guess, because I don't hem as much as I haw. Depends what kind of mood I'm in. But I never really make a definitive statement. Why? I don't want to be mean. I don't want this to sound selfish or mean, but I just feel like not everybody is entitled to my opinion. First of all, I'm not sure about a lot of things. So if you make me state something, you might just be making me say something that's ignorant or ill-informed. And I'm still working through a lot of things. So you say, what's your opinion of this? I go, you know, I'm thinking about a lot of things, but I don't want to really say them. I'm working towards lots of things, but I, you know, if you make me reduce it to language, a lot of times it's not even a universal language. It's language that has been shaped by people who have a specific agenda and want you to say certain words. Well, those words might not mean the same thing to me. I might say it wrong. And I might be thinking one thing, and I say it, and you say, well, that's not right. And you start correcting me. But I didn't mean credenza. I meant credentials. I just misspoke, I guess. So I didn't mean buffet. I meant credenza. I was seeing a buffet in my head, and I just gave it the wrong word. So a lot of times I feel like, you know, I have opinions. I just don't want to tell you. It's like when they used to say, you know, you don't have to say who you voted for. Well, I feel like that rule's gone or something. Yes, you do. Well, why? I thought it was a secret ballot. There's no secrets in the ever-present eye of the surveillance state. I'm kidding. I don't know, but yeah, everybody wants to get in your head. Everybody wants to see everything. Because we've been sharing so much, like, you know, we have webcams. You can see people get up, put their underwear on. That started years ago. Now you've been sharing so much, people now think they're entitled to see everything about your life, or they're entitled to the details. And I don't think so. And I feel that makes me a bad person. So yes, we want to know what you're all about. I don't know what I'm all about. I'd be lying to you. I would be lying to you. Can't I just remain here confused in a whirlwind of ideas? Can't I just be the living embodiment of chaos? Can't I just live in a world that doesn't have anything that's equivocal? You know? So is there bad and good? Oh, I don't even want to start. You know, because what's right be might for some, may not be not, but different strokes it takes. Different strokes. I have a lot of friends in the animal kingdom, and sometimes, for instance, I got a friend who's an owl. And the other day, the little owl flew back into his hole. Mr. Rogers had a friend that was an owl too, so I don't feel crazy. All right? His friend was called X. Excellent. And so my little owl flew back in his hole, and he was being chased by a crow and some other little birds. And I said, "Owl, what's going on?" He goes, "Oh, I've been out eating babies." I go, "Really? Yeah?" He goes, "Yeah, that's how I do. I eat babies." All right. And so I don't look at my owl and think, "Oh, owl is evil." Crow thinks owl is evil. Crow doesn't eat babies. Crow doesn't eat other people's babies. Oh, good for him. Mr. Crow's so superior. But owl does. I'm torn because I'm friends with both of them, and I don't even know what to say. I mean, what if you had a friend who said, you know your friend Tom? Yeah, he ate my baby. I want to pick sides. It's so hard. I'm so sorry. So, see, I live in that world, and so I don't open my mouth.
But you do open your mouth.
I make sure that when I open my mouth, I mix it with so much nonsense that nothing is really said definitively. And I always say I'm lying. I'm lying. I don't have any friends, especially animal friends. They're not my friends. Is that a lie? I don't know. You don't know. How would you know? How would I know?
I come away from your show feeling confused.
Is it confused, or have you just never used them before? Maybe that's it. Maybe so. I would say, oh, my feelings feel weird. I'm quoting The Matrix here. You've never used them before. I don't know what else. My ears feel weird.
Maybe you've never used them before.
Why?
Because you've been soaking in it.
What?
It's like palm olive, but it's made of electricity.
Oh, all right.
And it's keeping you from seeing reality.
Oh, a lot of your dishwashing liquids are like that. I know that. Every time I wash the dishes, I think there's some barrier between me and seeing things clearly. And I don't know what it is. Some kind of dirt. I realize that when I'm washing dishes. I go, there's some kind of film. And I can't remove it. Because if I remove it, everything will collapse. So I'll never know what I don't see. If you've ever gone to a shadow puppet show, you'll look at the shadow puppets and you're watching them and you get sucked into it and you forget their shadows. And then maybe you'll see what's on the other side, you know, the puppeteer with the little two-dimensional thing. And you think, well, that can't be it. Because when I was watching, even though it's sort of just a shadow of what's happening there, is more than what's happening behind the scenes. Because I'm not impressed seeing the little cardboard puppet. And even knowing how it works, and knowing that I'm not seeing the whole picture, just an impression, the impression also seems to me to transcend what's causing it. I know. Do you have that feeling? That the impression is transcending what's causing it? I'm also very interested in how the brain works. And the more I know about how the brain works, the more confused I become with my perceptions. Because my perceptions seem to transcend what's really happening. And I know that can't be correct. That's just some sort of product of the way I look at things, because I think that I am the center of everything. And in a way, I am to me. And I can never not be. And that is strange. I can never not be the observer. I'm always observing, and I am trapped by my senses. I'm trapped by this thing, and I think I get beyond them sometimes, but not really. And when they're broken down for me, I say, well, that can't be, really? So what I'm experiencing and I think are pictures in my head are just electrical impulses? Surely they must be something more. They aren't, and yet they are. Because even though they are something more and more complex, and even though what you're seeing are mere shadows, there's something about the shadows. There's something about it. And I don't think it's mystical necessarily. I just think it's the way things are if you're an observer. It's just the product of sensing things. Time may be very different in reality than what we perceive, but it doesn't matter. If you're in a dorm room and you're high as a kite and you're having a wonderful philosophical discussion and you're talking about quantum physics and you come to the conclusion that everything is just a bubbling foam of nothing, your alarm is still going to go off the next day and you have a class and the class is still strangely important to you. And the next day, if you're diagnosed with a disease, you still have to think about getting cured, or you have to come to terms with dying. Nothing you know that transcends that everyday experience is going to help you with it. Oh, just because you know that it's a book doesn't mean that the book isn't changing you. I've read many stories that I know are not real, but I still feel invested in them.
Invested in them.
You're watching a TV show on television. You get sucked into the plot. And all those people who are actors, you start caring a lot about. And then when the series ends, you feel a sense of loss, because that world became your world, even though you know it's a TV show. It's the same way with movies. 2 or 3 hours there, you think it's another world, and you start to care, but then you step outside of the theater and walk back to your car, and you realize that wasn't a clinger, it was Jamie Farr. Blah, 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 blah.
You know what? I guess the same thing goes with your life. You say, boy, I feel this is important, until you're laying there on your deathbed and you go, well, really, go, you can go ahead and die. Go, really, but I don't I have to? Nope. Surely I must, there must be something I got to know. You're good. Well, now, wait. Don't I have to, I should stay around a little bit to make sure that they mow the lawn. They're becoming real late, grass is looking shag. Not your problem anymore. All right. I remember when Dr. Oliver Sacks was dying. And this is very sad for me, because I'd followed his career and his writing for years. And then he was still writing after he found out he was gonna die soon. And so he wrote a lot about that. And it was heartbreaking to me, because I thought, oh, man, when geniuses die, you lose a lot, don't you? At least you lose the promise of new ideas. You've got all their old ones, pretty much. So he said, you know, I cared about the environment and global warming and everything, but you know, now it isn't my problem. Like, I'm gonna die. I mean, he didn't say he didn't care. He cared about the future and children and his children and everything, but it's like, you know, you're on the way out the door or something. All your concerns are temporary, but that doesn't mean they're not important now. And all your heartbreak is important right now, and all your pain is important right now. It is important, and it's important to you, and it's important to me, and your fears are important. You know, just because you are a temporary being, just because you are a shadow, doesn't mean that you're not the most important shadow. It doesn't mean that you're not the center of your whole world. And what a fantastic world it is. It's so great to be an observer. It's so great to look out and see others. When I am discouraged, I surround myself with those who share my values and feel that love, and that love lifts me up. And I think, even though we all end, even though this is all going to end, even though we all are going to go off of that cliff, there is something about the love and being together that makes it okay right now, in the instant. And that's what I'm about, is making you feel right, right now. Not back in the past, not in the future, right now. When we're together, I want to give you a certain feeling, a feeling of understanding and love. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on FMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City and Rockland County. There is hope. I feel you. You are a real person. You are loved unconditionally. And WFMU.org online, worldwide. My friends, thank you for joining me. And hopefully I will be with you again next week. And the story will resume. The story will resume, because it never ends until it does.